Welcome to Bookhype. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Kristen and Karen. Hey, ladies, how's it going?
Hi, pretty good. Hi.
So, what have you guys been up to since the last time we spoke about a week ago? Because we're actually getting in a routine again. Aren't we good? We're so good.
Yes.
I know.
What have we been doing? Watching lots of West Wing.
Okay. Yes. That's right. Karen's got to get caught up.
Mm-hmm. I finished season two.
Nice.
Which is intense.
Yeah. Beginning of that season, man. It was a lot to handle.
Yeah. Let's see. What else have we been up to?
Not work. Very much then, Lahal. I know.
Work, home, cleaning, laundry, blah, blah.
I know.
Blah, blah.
Life, you know, that thing that we have to do to function to be adults. Yep. No, mm-hmm. I feel ya. It's been very much the same. Like, with here, the school season is starting. So, like, even though I'm not teaching, a lot of the little kids that I work with are going like to pre-K or to kindergarten for the very first time. So I've had a lot of like work with just them and their families because it's a little scary when your little guy goes off to school for the very first time, and it's even scarier if they have special needs. So it's been kind of a stressful week and a half here in New England as all the kids start to go back to school, and I have parents that are like in full on panic mode. And so I understand. Life has been very chaotic here as well. But on a really happy note, the weather has finally cooled down. I don't know if it's cooled down for you guys, but like you can actually wear a sweatshirt in the evening and be comfortable. It's so amazing to not like be sweating 24/7 because it's been so hot here.
It's starting to cool down here too. So yeah.
Oh, good. And it's been brutal. Up until the last couple of days, it's been super hot. All right. So let's talk about what everyone's been reading. I am slacking. I didn't read anything last week. Not a good sign. But I promised to catch up and read a bunch. This is a long weekend for me. So I'm going to get on it tomorrow. I'm going to do nothing but read. So Karen, what have you been reading? At some of these titles I have not heard of before. So I'm kind of excited to hear about them.
I feel like maybe I've made up for you not being able to read this week because I read 4 books, which is actually quite a bit for me. And
yeah.
I went a little outside my comfort zone as well, which was really cool. So the first book I read was Baby Doll by Holly Overton. And this book is really interesting in that it's about a girl who was kidnapped when she was a teenager, and she is held hostage by this guy for like 8 years, I think. And the book starts when she escapes from him. And so it goes on to like her telling the cops who kidnapped her and the trial and everything that like the complications that come after she escapes. And that's fairly different. I feel like a lot of the stories that are told about girls like this is like when they're taken and how they survive being taken, because that's where all the high stakes are. And this was a little bit different, but it was so good and so real, and the characters in the story they have their good sides and their bad sides. My favorite part about this is actually the author, because Holly Overton, you can look her up on IMDb. She's written for a bunch of television shows. She's been in some things as an actress. She actually was the executive story editor for Shadowhunters.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, she's fairly well known, and her bio is really interesting because she's a twin sister. There's also a twin in the story, so it kind of parallels that. Her father was the leader of a gang, like the Overton gang, and her family life was kind of rough, so she has a really good window into prison life and what it's like to have a family whose dynamics are maybe not very traditional, and I think that really came through in the story. So if you like those kind of things, it's a little dark, but it's not too bad, because like I said, it takes place after she escapes. I really do recommend this book. Next, I read Nuts by Alice Clayton. You guys know I've been trying to read some Alice Clayton to see if any of her books really stuck with me. I did like this one a lot better than the last couple of ones, and it's made me even more excited for Cream of the Crop, because I really like Oscar, even though we don't know much about him at the moment. So there's like 9 people ahead of me for the book at the library, which was really upsetting, but I'm hoping they get through it quickly so that it'll download onto my Kindle and I can read it soon. And then I read Falter Kingdom by Michael J. Seidlinger. And this book was really weird. And I'm going to be honest and say that I didn't particularly like it, but I think that's a very personal choice. It's not like it was a bad book. I just didn't connect to it. It's about this kid who runs the gauntlet at Falter Kingdom, which is this big long tunnel, and kids run the gauntlet to see if they can pick up a demon on the way. So you go in this tunnel, it's really dark. You
run,
yeah, you run for like 10 minutes, and then you come back out, and some of them become haunted, like a demon attaches themselves to them. And the main character picks up this demon, who he ends up calling H. And it's this exploration of what it feels like and what happens when you are being haunted and then possessed by a demon. And it's a little creepy in places because things like doors opening, closing, and sounds. And, you know, I was like, oh, I'm reading this alone. It's kind of dark outside. Kristen's gone to work. I kind of don't want to be alone right now. But it takes a look at other people as well, and the character becomes increasingly more honest, not only with himself, but with other people and how he feels about them. And it's very strange. But if you like those kind of books that don't always have easy answers or just kind of very weird, pick this one up because it's well written, and the feelings of being possessed and everything really come across, but when I finished it, I was kind of like, I really don't know what happened. And so it was a little hard for me to be like, yes, I really liked this one.
Interesting. I'm so confused because most people don't want to be like find demons and have them attached to them. So it's like the polar opposite of everything you think of every demon story you've ever read kind of thing. Yeah. So that's why I think I was a little like, say what now?
Yeah.
So, okay. Okay.
And it is weird because when he becomes haunted, everyone suddenly treats him like he's the coolest person in the room, but then as it progresses, people get more afraid of him and kind of, right. He's sort of ostracized, and it's like, well, make up your mind. Do you think it's cool or not? And it's just, it's weird, but
yeah. Okay, what was the last one you read? Because it sounds also scary with its title.
Yes, this one is In a Dark, Dark Wood by Ruth Ware. I listened to the audiobook, which I highly recommend because the narrator was fantastic. And this is a story about this woman who goes to, I guess it's like a bridesmaid party. They call it a hen party, and I don't know if that's maybe just like a British.
It's British.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she goes to the hen party of one of her former best friends. She hasn't talked to her in 10 years. And she kind of reluctantly goes, and there ends up being a murder. And the main character is tied into all of it. And it's like a thriller mystery novel, but it's really well written, really well narrated. And I was having trouble figuring out who it was. Like, there are lots of different possibilities until you get to the end. And finally, that, you know, last piece sinks into place. And you're like, oh, I should have known the whole time. So it was a pretty good story, but also just the way that the narrator brings it to life, I think, made it even better than that. So, yeah, In a Dark, Dark Wood, I was kind of intrigued by the title because it's like that poem, and I couldn't help but pick it up.
And, Kristen, what have you been up to?
Well, it was kind of a light reading week for me. I kind of got addicted to Disney movies, and so I had them playing. I had, like, all the classic ones playing while I was at work. So, you know, Aladdin, Cinderella, Lion King, like all the good ones. But I did manage to fit a few in this week. I did a re-listen to Bettany by Jennifer Cruzy. It's one of my absolute favorites. I've read it a bunch of times. It's one of my go-to, like, you know, you can always count on that book. And I highly recommend both the reading of it and the audiobook if you're looking for just something fun. It's a really good one. I started Armada by Ernest Cline, which is not the sequel to Ready Player One, but it's kind of like in the same vein as Ready Player One. It feels a lot like Ready Player One, but it's not the same universe. It's about a kid who's sitting in his classroom and he sees out the window this spaceship that he has played in a video game. like, in the real world. He sees it, like, hovering out his classroom window. And nobody else in the classroom sees it, so he thinks he's crazy, but he soon finds out that he's not crazy, and it, you know, tumbles and gets crazier and crazier from there. It's a really good story, also narrated by Will Wheaton on the audiobook, which is good. Ooh. Fun. He's really good. He did the audiobook for Ready Player One, and I loved it. And so knowing he read this one as well, you know, was an easy pickup for me. But I'm liking it so far. I'm not finished with it yet, but it's getting kind of insane where they're at right now. And my last read is Wilder by Rebecca Yarros. I've never read anything by her before, and I randomly got an email from someone who is close to Jay Crownover and says that Jay really loved this book and was like, you should, you know, give this a shot. Let me know how you feel about it. And I'm almost done with it. Like, I've got like a chapter or two left, I think, and I really like it. It's about a like extreme sports guy who his family is really well off, and so he rents out this cruise ship so that he can finish college while taking a trip around the world with his buddies that are also like extreme sports adrenaline junkies, so they can go around the world and make this like video at the same time that they finish college, because his deal with his dad is that he has to finish school. Because of that, he needs a tutor to get him through everything, and he like hand chooses this girl who is, you know, amazing. And I love the heroine, and she's got some crazy stuff that's happened in her past. And yeah, it's a really, really fun read. And I'm looking forward. You'll probably see my review for that coming up in about a week or so. So yeah, it's been a light reading week for me, but still a very good one.
I love that. Awesome. Your light reading week would have been like pretty darn good for me.
Well, again, 8 hours audiobooks makes it really easy to burn through a lot of stuff.
Kristen has like this fantastic job where she can listen to books while she works.
Yeah.
It's kind of awesome.
One of the perks.
Yeah. I did just get in Roman Crazy, so I will probably be reading that first, because it came in on Friday. So I'm like, funny, my grandmother already grabbed it. I was like, what? Because she, for those of you who haven't heard the story, I have my Amazon account, and I bought my grandma a Kindle a couple of years ago for her birthday. And so it's connected to my Amazon account. So basically any book that I get through Kindle, she also has access to. And sometimes she goes and buys things when I'm not looking. And that just, it drives me insane, because I'm like, I did not buy these books. I'm like, wait a minute, grandma. She's like, oh, well, I needed something to read. Oh, grandma. So Roman Crazy came in, and she was like, oh, and she just finished reading Cream of the Crop, and she thought it was really funny. She's like, she makes me laugh. Oh, this is the author that makes me laugh, and like took the book from me. And I'm like, well, I have to go reconfiscate the book so that I can read it.
I am halfway through that one as well, and I was saving it for next week.
Right.
Because I know that one comes out on the 13th.
Yes.
It's pretty good. That I'm liking it a lot so far.
I need to reconfiscate it so I can actually read it. But currently my grandmother has it in her clutches, so I'm not sure I'm going to get it back. So yeah. But I wanted to read that one. I just have to wrestle it away from my 80-year-old grandmother. It's fine. Let's talk about book bites. So here is a very interesting one, actually. So have you ever read a book with an unusual formatting or structure? For example, no dialogue, bolded passages, minimal punctuation, etc. Karen, I'm going to assume this is something that you came up with, so I'm going to let you kick it off.
Yeah, I decided to ask you guys this because, speaking of Falter Kingdom, that one about the demon possession, every couple of paragraphs, he would bold a line in the text. And I showed it to Kristen, and I was like, have you ever seen anything like this? Because I don't think I've ever read anything where the author bolded a sentence, and there was, as far as I could tell, no particular reason why he did that. It didn't necessarily lend emphasis to something. It wasn't like it was always dialogue. It just was there. And it kind of gave a certain pace to the story, I guess. And even the whole structure of the page, it was like the sentences were closer together. Like it was single space and the page was very long. And this could just be because it was an arc, but the whole thing was, when I opened it up, I was like, oh, this is only like 200 pages long. I could get through this really quickly. Well, there was a lot of text on that page, and I just found it really interesting. But a book I'm reading right now, too, that I'll tell you about next week, I'm really excited to talk about it, there is no dialogue. There's dialogue, but it's not in quotes. It's just like, "How are you today?" my mother said. And it's like she's, the main character is telling you what her mother said instead of you actually, quote unquote, hearing what the mother is saying at that time. And I find that in some books really, like, it really lends itself to the story for some reason. But I've read other ones, especially I find in short stories, which can kind of break the rules a little bit more, that sometimes they'll just disregard punctuation or regular formatting. And I always think it's interesting to kind of take a step back and look at why an author would do that.
Yeah, I can't say that I've read books like that, but I know like Illuminae and Jemina by Jay Kristoff and Amy Kaufman. They are all like, they're all very different because it's like a found documents kind of book.
Yeah.
So it lends itself, it does have some images and things, and then it has like different like they look like emails or memos, and so it's a really interesting way to craft a story because there is no one like through storyline in a sense. Like, it isn't someone telling you what you should know, it's you discovering what you should know, which is always really cool. And I've seen some like free verse books, like the books that are done in verse, that the verses take on like shapes of things. Like, as you read the verse, the verse itself is shaped like a bird and stuff on the page. So I don't know if you guys have ever seen those. Those are kind of interesting. Verse books are not necessarily like my thing, but they're always interesting to kind of look at and to see how the design and stuff goes into them, because it's very specific and they're done in a very specific way. So it's always interesting to kind of look at those.
Yeah, I couldn't think of anything that I've read that was formatted in a crazy way. Like, just nothing sticking out in my brain. But there is a book called House of Leaves that, from what I remember, is a very dark story. I don't honestly remember all of what it regards, so I'm not saying read it because I've never read it and I have no idea. But I have a friend who read it a while back, and she showed me the book. And like, there were pages where the text would go in a circle, like from the middle out. And then the next page would start on the outside and work its way in. And then there were like pages where it would be blank except for three words. And it was a really crazy structured book. And I think that was like based on when it first like came about, it was like a collection of stuff from different people. And so then it was all like, it started out as somebody's like collection of things and it was turned into one solid story. I don't know. It's crazy. But I just remember seeing like the actual format of it and going, "What is that?" So that's the only one I could think of at all.
Interesting. Interesting. So listeners, if you know of any really coolly formatted books or something you find interesting in formatting, definitely give us a shout on Twitter so we can talk about it next time, because I'm sure there's something out there that we are not touching on that's probably really cool to look at. So, all right. So now we are going to talk a little bit about the news and some interesting news this week. Lots of different things happening with books, some lawsuits, some interesting bookstore options coming up, and some options on TV shows and things like that also happening. First, let's talk about the bookstores. It seems Amazon is really taking on this brick and mortar situation, and they are going to have not one, but two actual bookstores in the city of Chicago. I'm not really sure why they chose Chicago to be the first place that's going to have these bookstores, but they are setting up shop at two different places in Chicago. One of them will be its first like pickup location. So you can not only buy books, but you can pick up your other items from Amazon. So it'll be an in-place to go to pick up. And the other is going to be an actual physical bookstore. Actually, it already opened its first physical bookstore in Seattle, in University Village. Sorry, I'm skimming this article and it's all out of order. But Chicago will be the second city, I guess, to get a brick-and-mortar bookstore. So what do you guys think about Amazon opening up bookstores?
I mean, not having to wait 2 days to get my book would be fantastic to still get it for Amazon's price. But, you know, is it going to be Amazon's price? Just because Amazon has a brick and mortar bookstore doesn't mean it's going to be the same price as it is on Amazon. Like, Best Buy and Walmart do that sometimes where they'll have one online price and then in the store things will be more expensive. And so I have no idea how that's working, but, you know, I wouldn't mind going to an Amazon bookstore if it meant I could get my book now.
See, I don't know. I don't think they'll charge more because that would defeat the purpose of actually opening a brick and mortar store. Don't you think?
I mean, yeah, like that would be the assumption, but, you know, as they build more of them and depending on how Barnes & Noble does and Bix Books A Million and all the others, like if they kind of end up with the monopoly even on the brick and mortar business,
right,
you could see this become, you know, like Best Buy doesn't really have any competition, so they can charge more for stuff in store than online and get away with it. So who knows what it could mean.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. Go ahead.
The reason why I like Amazon is because I don't have to leave the house to get my stuff. So
Karen's like, I can wear my PJs 24/7 and still get my books. Yeah, just saying.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's fine. I still love bookstores. And if they offer things, you know how you can go into like Barnes & Noble and they kind of have like those things that are typical to Barnes & Noble and Books A Million's a little bit different. And if they have something that sets them apart from the other ones, I think that's pretty cool. But chances of me walking into an Amazon bookstore, I mean, there's only a couple of them, so pretty low to begin with. But I just don't really see why they feel like this is a good move forward for them. I mean, obviously they have their reasons, but Amazon is a digital company. I mean, they started and they thrive because they have these standards of having low prices and getting you your stuff really quickly. So it's an interesting choice, but I'll probably still just be using Amazon online.
Okay, it makes sense. I mean, I don't know. I love bookstores. I love going into bookstores and just looking around and doing that. But I love going into independent bookstores because they have a personality and a vibe that's all their own, and they do their own thing. And so, and luckily here around here, there are a ton of independent bookstores. The more you go into the cities or, you know, closer to the cities, we have some really lovely independent bookstores that I really like to go to that, you know, bring special events. And I guess that's the other thing with an Amazon bookstore. Are they going to get much more high profile authors? Like, how is that going to work? Do they have that option because they're Amazon? Like, do you know what I mean? So I think it'll be really interesting to see how they kind of play that out. But I love going into independent bookstores for that purpose. And I don't want Amazon becoming a bookstore to affect those independent bookstores, I guess. So we'll see how that plays out. And speaking of bookstores, there's also some news on the Barnes & Noble front. Publishers Weekly put out an article saying, you know, what's next for Barnes & Noble? There was an abrupt dismissal of the latest CEO, and many publishers were kind of stunned by this because they're trying to work really hard with Barnes & Noble because Barnes & Noble is a brick-and-mortar store, whereas Amazon is this beast online, but it also, you know, Amazon and the publishing houses had some difficulty with pricing, and they had some disagreements and, you know, some lawsuits and things. So I think the publishing companies are always looking for another outlet to sell their books and to be successful. And that is Barnes & Noble because it is the largest chain bookstore kind of left. But Barnes & Noble is also having its issues. So right now the company is kind of in a questionable place, because they got rid of their new CEO, who was a brand new CEO. He wasn't very CEO for very long. And so now they have gone back, and Len Riggio, who is the founder and the chairman, was supposed to retire, and now he's going to remain and be the CEO until a replacement can be found. So Barnes & Noble really hasn't said very much about the direction they want their company to go in, how they're going to figure out a way to compete with things like Amazon and Amazon brick and mortar stores. One thing that they had talked about, which I think is kind of funny in a way, is that they are opening some new stores, and those new stores are going to have cafes that have American style fare plus beer and wine. Like, who doesn't like a good glass of wine with their book.
Yeah.
But is that really going to be effective as a bookstore? Like, I'm not really sure that's going to help anyone sell books.
I mean, it'd be interesting if they did, like, an after-hours thing where you could come in and have a drink and, like, you know, if it was, like, not necessarily a bar atmosphere, but, like, a bar-like atmosphere where you could talk to other book lovers. Like, that would be cool. It'd be something different. But, yeah, just having, like, a restaurant, basically, or an American Fair kind of thing in Barnes & Noble, like, during the day, I don't know what kind of effect that would have. Yeah.
Right. But I think the other thing that Barnes & Noble really needs to do is it needs to have the people working in their bookstores actually be knowledgeable and not just know where a book is on a shelf. Because I think that's the downfall of Barnes & Noble, is that the people that work there aren't necessarily knowledgeable about books. And that makes it really tricky when you have people going in to ask for things or, you know, I want something in this genre and this. Well, they can take you to this section, but they can't tell you a single thing about the books on those shelves. So it becomes really tricky in that sense. And that's why I prefer the independent bookstores, because the people working in those bookstores absolutely know everything about those books. You know what I mean? They're committed to that. This is their life's passion. That's why they work or own these bookshops. And so I guess it's really tricky. If Barnes & Noble wants to do better, I think it has to be better and try harder at knowing its actual product.
I definitely agree with you there. I've had a lot of frustration finding things at Barnes & Noble. It's always, like, especially between YA and, like, romance and NA, like, you never know where things are going to be, so I always have to check 5 sections, and none of them ever know where the book is, so I have to run around myself and try and find it. So I do know what you mean. Like, it's troublesome.
All right, so let's move on and hope the fate of the bookstores figures itself out to some extent. So here's some really fun, interesting news. So do you guys know Julie Murphy's book, Dumpling? It came out maybe a year ago. It is about an overweight girl who is pretty self-secure in who she is, and then she starts dating someone, and he doesn't really care, but she starts to care more about how she looks and who she is, and she kind of loses herself a little bit. It's a pretty interesting story, a lot of fun, really interesting to read and see how the girl changes throughout the book because of herself and not necessarily because of outside pressure, which is usually how we see these books written. So Dumpling was optioned by Disney to be made into a film. So what do you guys think?
That sounds pretty cool to me. I mean, Disney's, you know, in terms of adaptations and stuff, they're doing pretty good, I would say. You've read this book, right, Jen?
Yes.
I was going to say, because as soon as you started describing it, I was like, that actually sounds really familiar. I think I heard her talking about that on the podcast before. Yeah, it sounds good. I think these kind of positive body image movies are really important to have. And I was reading a little bit about the author and her bio and the way that she describes how she grew up. I just thought that was really interesting and a really genuine sort of, like, way to put forth that story. So I'm interested. I'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, I hope they don't Disney-fy it. Do you know what I mean? Like, Disney has this thing where they make everything happy and sunny and bright, and it doesn't need to be that way. This book is really, really well done, and it highlights a lot of things that I think are super important, you know, especially in this day and age with everything that's going on. And I think it needs to take the book for what it is and keep it within its boundaries and not make it overly sunny and cheerful. Do you know what I mean? Not make it a caricature of itself, but keep it as it is, because it'll be the most successful in that form. So hopefully Disney, if you're listening, which I know you're not, you get that memo, because it's an important book. So let's keep it that way.
Do you know that, if the author is involved at all?
I do not. And it doesn't really say in this article if she is or she isn't. Most of the time with Disney stuff, the authors are not involved, is my kind of understanding, but I guess we'll see in time how it turns out. All right, so do you guys know who Ursula Le Guin is? I'm not really sure how you say her last name. but she is a fantasy sci-fi writer. She's been around forever. She's 86 years old, and she is receiving a huge honor. Her work is going to be added to the Library of America, which is like a huge, huge deal. You get a specialized book that's got, you know, the works that they pick usually for it to be put in. But as Miss Le Guin pointed out to Publishers Weekly, she says, there's some innate arrogance here. I want to do it my way. I don't want to be reduced to being the sci-fi writer. People are always trying to push me off the literary scene, and to hell with it. She chuckled. I don't want to be pushed. So she's agreed to do, you know, she understands that this is a huge honor, but she's going to do it the way she wants to do it. So she's actually picking out the work that's going to go into the Library of America. And it's going to be the complete Orsinia, which is just going to be published September 6th for the Library of America. It was published ages ago, but it's a collection of short stories. So I think it's super cool the way she kind of approached this. She wasn't going to let them pigeonhole her to be one kind of writer. She wanted to show a vast amount of her work. So, and if you guys, there's an article from Publishers Weekly that we'll post the link to, but she is probably the sassiest woman that I've read in a really long time. This article is hysterical. Some of the things she says, just, they make you laugh out loud, and I love her. But I think, Karen, you pointed out her birthday is in October, so she could be like our author spotlight for October.
Yeah, I hadn't even heard of her until this article, and then I was like, oh dear Lord, I need to read at least something written by this lady, because she's awesome. Things I hadn't realized I had missed, you know, that ever-present to-be-read list that never ends.
Yeah. Well, and here's the super interesting part, and this is the part of, like, the article I was like, So there are a couple works of Le Guin's that came out ages ago. One of them is called The Word for World is Forest, and it's about malevolent humans who brutally invade a planet of peaceful forest-dwelling aliens. And if that sounds familiar, it maybe sounds a little bit like Avatar from James Cameron, except the novel was written in 1976. Then there's Planet of Exile, which was written in 1966. It has a 15-year season, barbarians invading from the north, and vicious creatures called Snow Ghouls, all of which might sound familiar to any Game of Thrones fan. Even after that, she also had a School for Wizards when J.K. Rowling was only 3 years old. So if you look at her vast work, a lot of it, the things that we love about today's movies and TV and books, are kind of contained in her back catalog. It's really amazing to see, so I like it. I like her. I like her sassiness. And the absolute cutest part of this interview was when she talked about her and her husband, who sit in their living room each night and they read aloud to each other.
Like, yeah, that was really cute.
That was like precious. Like, it's amazing. So I'm really, really excited to read more about her and learn more about her. So if you guys are fans, let us know what we should read, where we should start. We'd love to hear about it. All right. So some more book news. Rather interesting. So you guys know who Marcia Clark is, maybe, perhaps. I'm not really sure. But if you don't, Marcia Clark was the district attorney in the O.J. Simpson case. It is probably the case that has made her most famous, just because during that time, she was on a platform that was completely different from anyone else involved in the case. It was always a conversation about her hair or her outfit or what she wore to court. It was never about the job she was doing. That happens a lot to women. But she's now turned from being a successful lawyer into being a very successful author. Blood Defense was her first novel. It came out this past spring, and it's been picked up as a legal drama, and it has a put pilot at NBC. So they're developing her new book series into television shows. And I think it'll be so cool because she was a district attorney for a really long time in Los Angeles. So I think she has some really interesting insights as to how a case works and to how things do and don't work. And so it'll be really interesting to see where this goes and what it turns out like. If it'll be your typical, your typical procedural, or if it'll be something different, if it'll have more to it.
Yeah, this sounds pretty interesting. I had to look it up, so maybe some of our listeners don't know either, but a put pilot is when they've agreed to show the pilot, because sometimes they film the pilot, they just show it to the networks, and then if they like it, you know, they'll go to a serious commitment or something like that. But a put pilot means that they will show audiences the pilot, so it sounds like they're pretty committed to the project already.
I have a feeling with her name behind it and all of these things going on, I think there'll be a high level of interest, to be honest. So I think it'll do well. Some more adaptation news. Michelle MacLaren, who is the former director of Wonder Woman, she's not the person who actually directed Wonder Woman. However, she has done work on Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, and she will also be directing an episode of Westworld, which is based on Michael Crichton's novels that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Trailer for that, by the way? Sorry, I did,
yes.
It looks amazing.
I know, it looks really cool. It is really, really cool. So she is going to be directing The Nightingale. It's a novel by Kristen Hannah, set in World War II. So the novel is about two sisters who are left to fend for themselves when the Nazis invade. Older sister, Vian, is left alone with her daughter when her husband goes off to war. When the Germans requisition her home, she is forced to make one tough choice after another. And then the younger, Isabella, is a rebellious 18-year-old girl who is searching for a purpose, joining the resistance after her lover betrays her. So that sounds intense. And that is something that she'll be working on. So The Nightingale is now being adapted as well. I think this might have been a novel that Danielle read, because this is definitely like right up her alley. Anything like historical and World War II-ish is definitely her thing. So we'll have to check with her to see if she's read it and see what she thinks about it. I've not read the novel. It's not really my cup of tea. What about you guys? Is this something you would just kind of pick up and read?
I like World War II drama, but sometimes it can be really heavy, so I have to be in the right mood. But this sounds like it could be a pretty good adaptation, and if the person who was in line to direct Wonder Woman is on board with this, then, you know, obviously she's a pretty solid choice, so that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, I like period, like, movies and that type of thing. I probably would never have picked up this book, but this is definitely the kind of movie that's, like, right up my alley, so I'll give it a shot and check it out, and if I like it, then I'll probably pick up the book. That tends to be a thing with me.
All right. So moving on to my least favorite article that we're going to discuss today. And I'm glad Brittany's not here, because this is all we would talk about. So it seems that there's not enough Sherlock in the world for movies. So for whatever reason, Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly are going to be starring in a new Sherlock film based on classic Holmes and Watson. Just no. That's where I'm at. That's all I've got. No.
Yeah, the fact that they're making it a comedy, and, like, nothing against these guys, because I know that they have a lot of fans. I don't particularly like their brand of comedy. I like John C. Reilly and his more, like, dramatic roles, his ones that are a little bit serious. Will Ferrell, the movies that I like from him are few and far between, maybe one or two of all the ones that he's done. But I don't know. I just don't see why this feels like a necessary thing, just because, especially right now, we have so many Sherlock adaptations. Why bother?
Well, and it's not as if none of the Sherlock adaptations are, like, comedic. Like, it might not be the primary objective of either the Sherlock series or the RDJ series of movies. Like, neither one of them is deemed a comedy, but they're both funny. They're both entertaining in every way, shape, and form. So, why must we go there? Yeah. I'm not a huge Will Ferrell fan either. I mean, John C. Reilly is a definite step up from Sacha Baron Cohen, who was originally, a part of the project, because I really can't stand him. And I like John C. Reilly, but I just, no, guys, come on. There's so many other things you guys can trash and destroy. Like, leave Sherlock alone.
This is definitely not my brand of comedy, and I think that's why it bothers me so much. I feel like it's gonna just make it weird. It's just gonna make it weird.
I don't mind, like, a comedic Sherlock Holmes movie, because that could be interesting. But Will Ferrell, who will be playing Sherlock, and John C. Reilly will be playing Watson, Will Ferrell tends to do those stupid comedies that I think, you know, people
yes.
like them. They do, and you know what? Good for you. But those are movies that I just cannot bring myself to watch. And for them to, like you were saying, Kristen, trash Sherlock just to make a comedy seems, I don't know. Just leave the source material as it is. Like, I mean, we've gotten a lot of adaptations where they change things, but it always still felt true to the source material. And of course, we haven't seen this yet, but right now, I just don't see how it could, you know, pay homage to what Sherlock originally was.
Yeah, I don't think its purpose is to pay homage, to be quite honest.
Fair point.
Let's be real. Like, I think it's about making it stupid funny. Like, that's what they do, and I just, it's not my jam, so we'll see.
Yeah, they're basically just gonna take Sherlock the Investigator and make him a doof, and I am just not okay with that. He's a detective. They basically needed a detective whose name was recognizable so they could make this ridiculous movie, and, yeah, okay, rage ended.
Yeah. All right, so moving right along to yet another fairly interesting story that Karen wrote. Do you guys know who the Donner Party is? I know Karen does because she wrote about it. Kristen?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. For those
of
you...
We had a whole conversation about it when this story popped up.
Oh, that's right. You're roommates. I totally forget this thing sometimes. So for those of you who don't know, the Donner Party is a group of pioneers. Yes, that's right. Pioneers. Like... they traveled by wagon, who set out to California in the mid-1850s and through a series of unfortunate events were forced to spend a winter in the snowy Sierra Nevadas. Now, if you live in Nevada, you know that that's a really bad thing. So in order to survive, they became cannibalistic, which is a little gross, but, you know, survival of the fittest, I guess. I don't know. So anyway, the reason we're telling you about this, yes, we do have a point, is that there is a novel going to be coming out called The Hunger that will feature them, and Karen says that there's a Walking Dead style twist to it. But here's the really big thing. The novel's not written yet, but it's been picked up by Fox, 20th Century Fox, to be made into a film. So, Karen, please explain.
I don't know if I can. I saw this news floating around, and I just knew I had to write it up because it was so ridiculous, and you guys know I like zombies. So I kind of couldn't resist, but I don't, like, okay, movies about the Donner Party have been done before. It's not like it's this new big thing, but to have this Walking Dead-style twist kind of intrigued me. And the fact is that the book, which, like you said, hasn't even been written yet and still has been already optioned, it's going to be written by Alma Katsu, who is a former CIA analyst and author of The Taker. And her books are, like, very different, very weird. That one is about an immortal being whose eternal love for one man means she must endure a terrible fate. And it's got this sort of, like, tragic sort of... thing about it, and just feels like the right fit for a novel about the Donner Party. And it was a six-figure deal, so clearly, and Ridley Scott's Scott Free will produce the film, so clearly, like, this is a big deal. So expect that to kind of be making the rounds in a couple of years, I think. And Kristen and I had a whole conversation about cannibalism, and I had to look up some stuff for this article, which was not pleasant. I didn't enjoy it, but I know more about cannibalism than I did before, so yay for knowledge.
Yay for knowledge.
I don't know if you need to be knowledgeable about that kind of thing, though. Like, really, it's like frivolous knowledge, unless you're planning on being a cannibal, in which case we are no longer friends. Just saying.
You know what? If I have to survive, just saying.
And I'm moving.
Kristen, I fear for you.
My parents live 5 minutes away. They live 5 minutes away. I'm moving. This might take a while.
This is why we have to go to the store today and get some food to put in the fridge.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Self-preservation, Kristen. Go buy her some snacks.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, well, the Donner Party does seem interesting. It seems interesting the way this has come about, so I guess we'll just keep an eye on it because it'll probably be a while before it hits, so... something to look forward to, I guess. All right, so we have some J.K. Rowling news, because really, what's an episode without any? So There's some question about the next Corman Strike novel and when it will be out. Typically, she's been on an annual release for those books. Those are the books that she writes as Robert Galbraith, but she has not announced when the fourth book will be coming out, probably because she's had some things to do this year, you know, like write and work on the Fantastic Beasts movie or, you know, the whole play thing that's been happening. So, you know, a smidgen busy, just, you know, no big deal. I think it's just a matter of time before she announces when the next book will be out. It clearly will not probably be out this year. I would say it's probably going to be a 2017 release now, just due to her, like, psychotic schedule. But she is saying that there will be as many as 6 more books in the series, which would put it up to close to 10 books. So our lovely detective will be around for quite a while. Have you guys read these books at all?
I've read the first one. But let me tell you, my dad has read all 3. He's super addicted to them, and it's really cute. I send them to him for, like, birthday and Father's Day, and he just finished the latest one, and he read it in, like, a day. So I'll be excited to learn that there are up to 6 more books in the series.
Yeah, I have not read them. I own Cuckoo's Calling, I think. I'm pretty sure. And I always intended to read it. It just, you know, it's on my shelf staring at me. So, yeah, hopefully with all the adaptation talk going on, I'll probably be able to sneak it into my to-be-read and really focus on that. So I've always intended to read them, just haven't gotten to it yet.
All right. So, and you mentioned the adaptation news. So those novels are in the process of being adapted by, I think it's, is it the BBC? Yes, BBC. Yes. I got it. Sorry. The gentleman who is cast as Cormoran, that's how you say his last name, he was on a BBC show, so I didn't want to say it wrong. But he is from the Musketeers, and his name is Tom Burke. So it was mentioned in passing that he will be cast as Detective Cormoran Strike. So if you look at his picture, his image fits the description, and he's also approximately the same age as Strike in the series, so I think he's a good fit. So it's saying that the first season of the show will cover the first 3 books.
What?
Yeah, that's what I'm reading right now.
Why?
So it says, filming on the BBC is dubbing the Cormoran Strike Mysteries is expected to begin filming later this year for a 2017 television premiere. The first season will cover the first 3 books from Rowling, The Cuckoo's Calling, The Silkworm, and Career of Evil.
That seems ill-advised.
Yeah, that seems like you're burning through a lot of material for no particular reason.
It's J.K. Rowling. Milk it for all it's worth. We will watch.
Yeah, it's really strange.
What are they gonna do for season 2?
I don't know.
Go off on their own? Also, ill-advised.
I mean, not everyone's Game of Thrones.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah. I don't know why you would do all 3 at once. If you have that much source material, I would think you get 3 years out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, here we are talking about the 4th book, but if they're burning through the first 3 for the first season, it makes me wonder how many books there are going to be. Like, maybe she's planning a lot more, or maybe she's going to buckle down and pump out a bunch of them in the next year and a half or something, and they already know that. Who knows? It just seems weird that they would...
Yeah. I would think that there's enough material in the first book to get you through 10 episodes, because the BBC doesn't do... In the States, we do usually 22 to 24 episodes for our seasons. The BBC isn't like that. They're usually like a 10-episode arc, if you think of Doctor Who and stuff like that. It's usually just a 10-episode arc. They have a break. They go back. Do you know what I mean? So unless... Because Andrew wrote this article, so I'm wondering if by the first season... He means it'll be broken up into 2 chunks. Do you know what I mean? You know how Doctor Who in some places have season A and season B? Like, they're spread out over the 1-year period and they pop up at 2 different times. I'm wondering if that's what it is. I don't know. We'll look into it more and get back to you on it, because it seems like that's a waste of material.
They could even do it as a mini-series and do, like, 3 big episodes like Sherlock does.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea what this is about. To be honest. So We'll have to go back and investigate some more and find out what the deal is. All right, so moving on to yet another adaptation. This one, I am A, excited, and B, also very nervous. Netflix, being the grand adapter of books that it is at this point in time and original content producer that it is at this time, is set to adapt for television Anne of Green Gables. Now, if you guys have never seen the Anne of Green Gables that were produced in, like, the 80s, you're missing out, first of all. But it's, like, one of those things that you kind of just, you grow up watching and it becomes near and dear to your heart and you don't ever want it to change. So, while I'm excited, I'm also very, like, nervous about it. Did you guys ever watch Anne of Green Gables when you were younger?
I did not.
I also did not, and I was all right. I was scolded for this on Hype the other week.
Okay,
because
good.
Selena, I believe, was a big fan of it. I'm not sure. Really? I think it was her. But yeah.
Selena, like, was in a foreign country and she managed to watch Anne of Green Gables and you two Americans somehow missed it. Granted, it was a Canadian show, but you still could have made it work.
Yeah.
It's at least in your original language. It is not in Selena's. Girls.
Hey, I was busy watching, like, the Waltons and, you know.
Same thing. You totally could have watched this one. It fits perfectly in with that homey goodness.
I will scold my 5-year-old self next time I talk to her.
I was watching Batman.
Your parents, because I feel like they missed the boat on that one.
Meanwhile, I was watching Adam West as Batman. And, yeah, that was all I cared about at the time.
But in terms of Netflix, like, I would hand Netflix my firstborn child and not feel guilty about it. They're totally able to do basically whatever they want at this point, and I feel like they're taking on this, which, I mean, even through osmosis, like, I know people love the show and the book and all of that. I think they're going to do a good job.
Netflix is just totally killing it right now with the Gilmore Girls. And now with this, like, please. And Gilmore Girls.
Stranger Things,
absolutely. Like, and Stranger Things was this little, I mean, that was its own little original thing that they just decided they were going to do. And they did it. And the beauty about Netflix is they're not on this huge time crunch. They're, you know, their budgets can be flexible because they can go, oh, it didn't work, let's try this. Because they don't owe anybody anything. They go, it's going to be released this year. They don't have to tell us when in that year. So they do their thing, they make it good, and then they release it. That is the beauty of Netflix. They are their own boss, and they kind of decide how they want their programming to go. And thus far, they've been super successful with it. So I'm excited. A little apprehensive, but excited. So basically, this is going to start filming in Ontario, Canada next month, and it'll be distributed on Netflix and airing in the United States and the rest of the world through Netflix. So Breaking Bad writer and producer Moira Wally Beckett is penning the entire 8-episode series and will run the show. It's expected to air on the CBC, which is the Canadian Broadcasting something, in 2017, and presumably it'll run on Netflix around the same time. Anne of Green Gables was an 8-book series. It's been adapted a ton of times, but there's that one that's just, like, perfect. Anyway, you guys have now some homework, because you need at least one episode of Anne of Green Gables, at least.
I was going to say, much homework in this episode.
I'm telling you. It also says that the new adaptation will honor the foundation of the book, but will incorporate new adventures reflecting themes of identity, sexism, bullying, prejudice, and trusting oneself. See, I don't feel like you need to change and incorporate any new themes into Anne of Green Gables. I feel like she had it covered.
What if this is your new favorite show?
It would have to work really hard for that. We'll see. Anyway, here's a lawsuit for us, just to mix it up a bit. So we all know that we've talked about Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies. The author is Seth Graham Smith, and he is now being sued by Hachette, Hachette. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this lawsuit. So clearly, Graham Smith has done all of his all of his stuff is based on other works that are public domain. So Pride and Prejudice, some Abraham Lincoln stuff. What was the other one? Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters. I mean, you name it. And it's all based on publicly available works. So as we know, if you've read or seen Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, he literally takes the words of Jane Austen and adds things into it that are his own to make it a little bit different. But the primary content of the novel is the original novel. So Hachette is now suing him because he had two books due to them left on contract. So one of them was a sequel or a spinoff to Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, and it's called The Last American Vampire. And so that one was published in 2015. And then the second part of the book deal was a subject to be determined by the author, and then Hachette had to sign off on it. And it was supposed to be due, like, handed into the publisher, finished in June of 2013. That didn't happen, so he got an extension, and so it was due this past summer. And so Hachette is suing for half of the previously allotted $1 million. Oh my goodness. The publisher is claiming that the manuscript is subpar and in large part an appropriation of a 120-year-old public domain work. It's also on a subject that Hachette never approved to begin with. So he has not issued a statement about the lawsuit, but it'll be interesting to see. And again, Hachette knew that most of his works were based on previous public domain work. So I'm a little confused about that part of the lawsuit, because that's the whole point. That's what he does.
It sounds like he took his shtick one step farther and they don't like it. So now they're trying to sue him because it wasn't like what it. They, yeah.
Honestly, like, that's they don't, what it looks like. They don't like either, the topic, so they're suing.
Yeah, either they don't think that it'll sell, and so they're worried about it being a worthwhile contribution from him to the contract, or they just don't like the idea of it. They don't like the story. So now they're trying to make it out to be something it's not. Like, yeah, if you've read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, or at least looked at it or seen the movie, yeah, he takes the actual work and works his own story into it to make it a new thing. So that's the whole idea. It is an appropriation of the public domain work. I don't understand what they expected. Right. Like,
didn't he only change like five words? Like, I don't understand. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you accepted all the other ones when they were doing really, really well. So I am now confused.
Yeah, and they've been collecting that paycheck happily. So
I feel very little sympathy for the author here. So it sounds like I'm on the other side of this, because he turned in this book 34 months late. He had to get two extensions to complete it. And if he's turning it in and it's subpar, like they said, then I don't really blame them for not being happy about it. They paid him $1 million to get this done, and he couldn't even get it done on time. And yeah, I understand that what he does is take the original story and add something to it, but if you read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, that story is changed quite extensively because of the zombie part. And if it feels like this is just an appropriation of the public domain work, then clearly he didn't add enough to really change the story. So, I mean, with him not issuing a statement, we're kind of not really getting his side of the story here. But I, for right now, am coming down on Hachette's side, because they invested a lot into him. And if he couldn't turn in his work on time and with a quality that they're used to, then something's going on.
It's not even like I'm choosing sides. I just think that when Hachette put in the appropriation clause, I think it's really funny, because, again, that's what he does. Like, so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out and what's really going on behind all of this. But it's not unusual for an author to ask for an extension. Have you heard of George R.R. Martin? I mean, he's on like a 4-year extension. It's totally fine. So again, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because I feel like there might be a little bit more to this story that we're not getting.
Yeah, and I just feel like he's really not having the greatest year, because Pride and Prejudice and Zombies didn't do well at the box office. Not that he was like super involved with that, but it's still
right.
His story. And he's no longer directing the Flash movie. He left because of creative differences. So I'm just like, what is going on with you, man? Is everything okay?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't even realize he was part of the Flash movie. I don't know how I missed that, but I did somewhere along the line. All right, on to somewhat happier news, although confusing. So Kristen, in her super sleuthing ways, discovered we thought Lincoln's novel was the last of the Oxford series, because we talk about the Oxford series like on the weekly, so you guys should know what it is by now. And Lincoln's novel comes out in December. But Kristen stumbled upon this novel that's an Oxford novel. It is by Lauren Lane. It's called I Knew You Were Trouble. And it comes out in April of 2017, which is after Lincoln's novel. We have no idea who this man is that's going to be in this Oxford novel. There's nothing else. There's no description. There's nothing. There's just a really nice cover and a title and a release date.
Yeah. What surprised me is that this book has a cover and we have not heard about... Lincoln is the last member of the group that is unattached. So we assumed Lincoln was getting a novel and that he would be the last one. It seemed like she was saving him for the last book. Well, I was stumbling around looking for some info on the Wedding Bells series, which is currently being published. The last book comes out in October. And I was looking through her like full list of books on Amazon, and at the very end of her, the list of covers, is this book. So I was like, wait, what? So I went to her website, which does not have it listed. The title is not listed. The cover is not there. There's no talk of any more Oxford novels after Lincoln's. So I was like, this is incredibly weird. Well, I follow her on Facebook. And so randomly the cover popped up in something that Lauren shared from a woman named Sue Grimshaw, who I believe is a really big blogger and friend of hers. Apparently is an editor at Penguin Random House, which I didn't know, but she just posted the cover and said, so in love with this cover, and basically just put a little blurb about the Oxford novels in general. And Lauren Lane's assistant, who does a lot of her social media when Lauren's like in the writing zone, commented and said, this is Lisa. Since Lauren is celebrating for better or worse today, we don't have any information on I Knew You Were Trouble, aside that it is an Oxford romance. She doesn't even know who the hero is. Like, what? Lisa doesn't. Lisa doesn't even know who the hero is. Lauren has kept it top secret as to who the hero of this book is. So, yeah, no idea where this book came from. And now we're all just very excited.
I'm intrigued.
I know. I'm like, does Lincoln have a twin? What's going on?
What exactly is Lincoln's secret? Once we know that, maybe we'll have a better idea.
Right. I feel like it's got to be connected to Lincoln in some way. And that's why we're not getting any information on it until we get Lincoln's novel, because it would ruin it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, got to keep that stuff tight wrapped. So
it's got to have something to do with someone we meet in Lincoln's book, because other words, we would have to hope.
I mean, we've got no one. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Very excited. And the last item on our list is kind of really fun, and it was sent in by a listener, Lucy. So this is evidently, you can watch Edgar Allan Poe Through a Murder Mystery Dinner Party, which is kind of really funny. So this is from the folks at Shipwreck Comedy, and it was backed by a whole bunch of people through Kickstarter, and it's called Edgar Allan Poe's Murder Mystery Dinner Party. It's landed on YouTube, and it takes a moment and check out, there's an exclusive trailer you guys can check out. But I think it's really funny that these guys have like created this Edgar Allan Poe Mystery Dinner Party. It's a 10 episode mini webisode kind of thing. And it's got more than 20 characters from literary history, and it's really just kind of fun and entertaining. So you guys know who else is included. We have Edgar Allan Poe and Lenore, which is from The Raven Poem. Annabelle Lee, Ernest Hemingway, Charlotte Bronte, H.G. Wells, Emily Dickinson, George Eliot, Agatha Christie, Mary Shelley. It just says Eddie. I don't know who that is. Fyodor Dostoevsky, Louisa May Alcott, Krishanti. Not really sure who that's supposed to be either. Oscar Wilde, and then a couple of other people. So I think, I don't know, it looks really fun and interesting. So if you guys are into like webisodes of things, you should definitely check it out. and see how Edgar Allan Poe would host a murder mystery party, especially with all these other literary friends.
Have you watched the first episode yet?
I've not had time. Is it funny?
We sat down. I was like, this is 10 minutes long. Let's just watch it really quick so we kind of know what we're talking about when we get on Book Hype. There's two episodes out right now. And we just watched the first one. It was pretty damn funny. Edgar Allan Poe is a little bit of a flop, and he's really excited for this dinner party, and he's afraid no one's going to show up, and they finally all sort of file in, and you meet them one at a time, and these characters are absolutely ridiculous. I forget my favorite one. I forget what he... Was that Oscar Wilde, Kristen?
Yes.
Okay, he... He is so ridiculous, but really funny. And yeah, I think people are gonna really like it. And the quality is very high, especially for a web series. Shipwreck Comedy, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, let's just say H.G. Wells shows up to the party with a microwave and Edgar Allan Poe thinks he's insane. Like, it's cute.
That is kind of cute, actually.
And everyone...
Yeah, like, there's a lot of cute stuff like that.
Emily Dickinson shows up, and they don't see her at first. She's standing right there, and she's like, hi, it's me. She's like, oh, who are you? She introduces herself, and they just keep forgetting about her, and it's like this gag for the whole episode. Oh. It's so funny.
Poor Emily Dickinson. All right, so that wraps up all the things we had to talk about on this episode of Book Hype. However, we are going to let you know what our next couple episodes are going to be about, so you can feel free to tweet us any information you'd like us to talk about. So next week's episode is going to be our favorite school or fall books. The following episode will be our author spotlight of the month, and it's going to be Roald Dahl because it is, I believe it's his birthday. Mm-hmm. And then our Book Hype book of the month, which will be our last episode of September, is Spontaneous by Erin Starmer. And it's Karen's favorite thing ever because there are mushrooms in it.
And fire. I mean, I don't like fire, but spontaneous combustion is very interesting to me.
Yeah, there's a little bit of everything in there. A little bit of everything for Karen. So if you guys have any favorite school or fall books you want us to talk about, please make sure you tweet us at Book Hype. And if you have a suggestion as to which books we should read for the Roald Dahl spotlight, again, tweet at us at Book Hype. We're always happy to hear from you guys. And I think we've been doing a better job responding. We're trying really hard to make sure we're responding to everyone. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.